12th homer of the year. Two-run shot. Cubs piling it on here in the sixth.
Alex Cohen with the home run call of the day. Seiya Suzuki doing the honors with the home run. What a way to start the day. Thank you, everybody. At BB isn't boring. At BB isn't boring. Spread the word, please. Spread the word. Get some stickers. Get some wristbands. Get some t-shirts. Whatever you do. But just spread the word. Tell them about baseball isn't boring. We appreciate it. And we appreciate everybody who's listening, reviewing, rating, subscribing. Also, just enjoying. And today, we're leading into a big topic of conversation. We leaned into the topic of conversation for weeks about Rafael Devers, right? Now we're leaning into the big topic of conversation in baseball, Juan Soto playing for the New York Mets. What does it all mean? Mets lose again. Not good for the Mets. And especially considering all the chaos that is sort of following around Juan Soto. So we wanted to take a deep dive into it with Tim Britton of The Athletic, guy who has come on the podcast multiple times and always is excellent, always offers next level perspective. And that's exactly what he does with Juan Soto. And to top it all off, we got an insider's perspective as well. Our guy, John Gibbons, bench coach of the New York Mets, who gives us the idea of exactly what it's like to be the bench coach of the New York Mets, what it's like to be the bench coach of Juan Soto and Francisco Lindor and Pete Alonso and the entire team. He's been through a lot. He's seen a lot of superstars come and go, and he's also dealt with exactly what they have to deal with. All right, well, once again, thank you, everybody. At BB isn't boring. At BB isn't boring. We're going to kick things off with Tim Britton talking Juan Soto, New York Mets, and we'll go right into John Gibbons after that. All right, here you go. Here's Tim.
There's no human being I'd rather be talking to right now than Tim Britton. Why, Tim? Why?
That's my introduction every time. I'm always the best person to talk to.
You see, it's your introduction every time?
Yeah, that's what I always hear.
I mean, it's amazing. Thank you for listening to the podcast. It's the introduction for every single human being who's been on here.
No, I refuse to believe that.
Well, in fairness, it's true every time. Because I am truly honored every time I talk to you, and truly honored every time I talk to anybody on this. And that's a streak that hasn't been broken and won't be broken this time. So thank you.
Appreciate it.
Juan Soto.
That's
the one. He plays for the Mets.
Yes, yeah, I've heard.
He plays for the Mets. So when you started, Juan Soto signed with the Mets. Mm-hmm. I think we were there both when it happened.
Yeah.
We may have done a podcast.
We did, yeah.
In a hotel lobby.
In a hotel lobby.
Yeah. So this is a good jumping off point. As we were talking through this, and I encourage everybody to go back to that podcast back in December, and now we've landed here in May, before we get to sort of all the chaos and controversy and everything else, what surprises you the most, if anything, about sort of what this was? Because, like, I think at that time when you have these teams like the Yankees and the Red Sox, but all bidding, and all we're hearing is, oh, no, he's worth the money, he's worth the money. It's not only because he's a great player, it's because he's this and that and this and that and this and that. Well, okay, what actually was with this and that? What was the surprising of what was?
About what's transpired?
Yeah. I mean, just about like him. I mean, it can be as a player, it can be as a human, whatever.
I mean, I think the thing that's confused Mets fans the most at the moment is that, like, you're not seeing the kind of confidence that you're used to seeing in Juan Soto in the batter's box. Mm-hmm. You're not seeing that Soto shuffle after a pitch on the outside that he gets a good look at, or that head nod that he does seemingly preceding a home run. Like, you know, we're used to seeing, you know, Mets fans certainly are used to seeing it from his time in Washington and then across town and with the Yankees, that, you know, the way he kind of controls an at-bat, not just in how he takes a pitch, but like in the kind of attitude he expresses in the at-bat, and that's been absent for most of the regular season. And so that's kind of been kind of the, like, the prelude to thinking that, you know, he's not quite himself so far. And the numbers, you know, his overall numbers look pretty solid. Like his OPS plus, I think, is 130 or 132. Like, would that all of our slumps
is
30% better than the league average. But he hasn't come through in kind of the bigger spots. He's only got one hit with a runner in scoring position in the last 29 or 30 days. So it's been, you know, he hasn't had that kind of signature moment that every player wants to have in their new town. Hasn't had that walk-off hit or that big eighth-inning go-ahead home run. So I think, you know, there's been a little bit of caution in kind of Queen's embrace of him to this point. And that the team is struggling at the same time he's struggling these last few days just amplifies the spotlight.
So here, this play, amateur psychologist. Why? Like, why? I mean, I think you hit on something, though. I remember always talking about this with a guy. Now, he's been to a couple different teams, so he's been through this rodeo before. But there's also that moment where you have your moment and all of a sudden you realize I'm part of this team. The guy I always remember talking to about this was Torrey Hunter. This shows you how old I am, but Torrey Hunter, when he went from the Twins to the Angels, he was slumping, then he hits a grand slam, and then all of a sudden he's a hero and he's like, I'm finally actually part of this team. I think what you said was interesting, that he hasn't had that moment. I don't know if that's the thing. But for you, like, what is the impetus for this? What is the impetus for this, like, sort of, it's okay, it's all right, I'm a little uncomfortable. What's the impetus for it?
I mean, I think it is just, like, he doesn't feel 100% himself at the plate. Like, I think, you know, he hasn't come through in those bigger spots. Like, I think he's not doing, I don't think he's struggling because he's not doing the shuffle. I think he's not doing the shuffle because he's struggling. Like, he understands that it's not where he wants to be mentally and kind of controlling those at-bats like we talked about. So I think as he, you know, when he gets kind of that jam shot base hit to score two late in the game, like, you know, maybe lucks into something, you know, he's hitting ball hard. Like, he hit a ball, I think, 112, 113 miles an hour right at someone the other day in a big spot with runners in scoring position. So he's been close. So I think once that moment comes, there's probably going to be an exhale and a monkey off the shoulders or monkey off the back kind of thing for him. I think the way this week has gone and the return to the Bronx coinciding with all of this has just made it, like, it feel like kind of one thing after another for him and the team.
What's your take on the report stuff? You know, like, I'm talking about the start with just the vibe that, this isn't his favorite place, and it sort of spirals, like this, certainly when he went to San Diego, I didn't get the sense that it was, you know, it was sort of, you had these, you better show that you like it here or else. But what's your take on, like, all this scuttlebutt, all this buzz?
Yeah, I mean, I think when he went to San Diego, it wasn't a seamless transition for him at that point. It hasn't been at this point. You know, everyone I've talked to in the Mets clubhouse and Mets front office, they're not concerned that this is, you know,
they think he likes it here.
They think he's comfortable. You know, like, we've seen him go into the bullpen and just kind of BS with the relievers down there during stoppages in play. Guys genuinely seem to like him, and vice versa. So I think, you know, again, it's 2 months into a 15-year relationship. I don't think the Mets, you know, they put a lot of time and research into their decision to give Juan Soto $765 million. That wasn't an impulsive decision on the part of Steve Cohen or David Stearns. They've been talking about it since the day Stearns was hired. So I don't think they're going to let 2 months of him being not quite his best affect the way they view that partnership down the line.
You know what's weird? You know, the fact is that, you know, yeah, he was in Washington, yeah, he was in San Diego, but last year he was in the exact same city, right? And, you know, we talk about the differences in reaction, we talk about the differences in perception, and you didn't, and maybe he got off to a good start with the Yankees, right? I mean, that was a big part of it. But also there was the Judge factor, right? It was like, and everyone said, well, you know, Yankees have Judge and Mets have Lindor, but it's different people, right? I mean, I think they almost, I guess you would know better than I would, like, did Soto leapfrog Lindor in the sense of, like, the alpha? because he didn't leapfrog Judge, right?
I mean, no, I don't think he's leapfrogged Lindor. No. I think Lindor is still the guy who knows, you know, when this team has a losing streak, which they still haven't to this point, really, that he's the guy who has to talk. He's the guy who's still kind of viewed as the leader in the clubhouse. And I think Soto kind of appreciates that, probably the way he appreciated Judge in New York. You know, so I think the big difference is the way he got off to a good start last year. And you know as well as I do that in these big markets, like what happens that first month, those first 2 months, really color how you feel about a player the whole season.
Right.
Like, and Lindor knows that from 2021, where he had the two worst months of his career in April and May, his first year with the Mets.
Mm-hmm.
And even as he rebounded that season, the next season, there was still a lot of talk like, oh, he's never really liked it here. He's never fit in here. You know, this is too much for him. You know, he got booed in his home stadium, something that has yet to happen to Soto. So, you know, guys on this team, Edwin Diaz is another example, guy who rebounded after a rough first season. Carlos Beltran's in the front office. He did it kind of most famously for them back in 2005 and 2006. Mm-hmm. So, again, I don't think there's a concern long term here, but let's know, like, that first big hit, that first, you know, 8-game winning streak they're able to put together where he's a real part of it is going to be really helpful down the line.
How different is it? You live on the outskirts of New York / Philadelphia. How different is it playing for the Mets and the Yankees?
Mets versus the Yankees?
Yeah.
No, I don't know how different. I've only covered the Yankees as an intern. I think the Yankees, you know, I think there's more of a confidence from the Yankees that it's definitely going to work out. It's the Yankees. It works out for them. Whereas the Mets have had kind of that opposite vibe for a long time that, like, oh, you know, you trade for Francisco Lindor and everyone thinks, is this going to be Roberto Alomar again? Is this going to be Carlos Baerga again? Same team, same middle infielder. And so there's kind of that thought that, you know, this great acquisition happens. What's the problem here? There's got to be some other shoe to drop, and I think the Mets are growing out of that. Certainly, the way they played the second part of the second half of last season and the off season that they executed, I think there's a lot of feeling from the fan base that okay, things are changing here. This is a remaking or rebranding of the franchise under Steve Cohen and David Stearns, and you know, but you got to do it you got to do it on the field to make that all come to fruition for the fan base.
So. Our producer, Evan, does power rankings, which everyone waits up all night. We like to keep it fresh. We don't tell people we're going to drop them. It could be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever. But the latest one, I think he had and he's a Mets guy. He's a Mets guy. He has a signed Reed Garrett poster right in his backdrop. That's how big a Mets guy he is. He has him as number 3, okay? Tim Britton's power rankings. You've seen them play. Where do you put them? Where do you put
in the league right now?
Yeah,
I take part in the Athletics power rankings. I believe I also had them third this week.
Behind Detroit.
Actually, just behind the Yankees and Dodgers.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow! Look at you.
I think, like, you know, the Phillies are playing well in the division. That you know, the context to what Soto's gone through the last 5 days is, like, the team's lost 4 of 5, and they're under 500 over the last 23 games. The Phillies have caught them in the division. Atlanta's looking more and more like itself. And this idea that, oh, maybe, you know, when they were up 5 in the division in April after sweeping the Phillies, there was something, maybe they can kind of run away and hide a little bit. And we knew that the National League East would not be that easy.
You know what? The only thing better, the best way to punctuate this conversation is you saying, you know who I would really like to listen to right now? John Gibbons.
Really like to listen to John Gibbons right now. You know, he's on the inside. He knows more than anyone on this topic.
Well, there you go. Here's John Gibbons. There's no human being I'd rather be talking to right now about baseball margaritas than John Gibbons.
Are you that bored, Rob?
No, it's never.
Sorry, we couldn't find anybody else.
I've driven to Toronto to talk to you. I've driven to New York to talk to you. I think I may have flew to California to talk to you. I don't know. Texas, definitely. So, yeah, absolutely.
Well, Rob, you're one of my favorites, man. It's always good seeing you. Yeah. Up in, you know, like you mentioned Texas, where I'm from, but my roots are right here, man.
Yeah, we're in Boston. Yeah, yeah.
I tell everybody that Yankee blood flows through me, but that's the jerk in me. Not really.
I said, listen, I mean, it seems like yesterday your grandma was calling me to say, get my grandson a job with the Boston Red Sox.
Oh, yeah.
I said, I'll see what I can do.
Well, yeah. Well, you got more clout now than you used to.
Yeah.
She was still around in my work.
Well, you know how long ago that was? I picked up my home line.
Well, you know what, Rondo, you know, I had some family that live up in Beverly and Gloucester. They came down last night. It's great to see them. And I love this part of the country. You know, it's a beautiful place and my favorite ballpark to go to. And a lot of great memories here.
Yeah, well, you're creating your own great memories. As a straw that stirs a drink when it comes to a team that wins a lot. So congratulations. And I know you say you got the easiest job in the world, but it's not.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't. There's a lot of truth to that statement. The guy sitting next to me over here, Mike Sarbaugh, third base coach, has the toughest job on the team, you know?
Oh, especially at Fenway. Yeah, yeah.
Well, anywhere.
Yeah.
You know what? He's the only guy, the third base coach, the only guy that's got to go out there. They can't hide in the dugout like the rest of us. They got to think, they got to, you know, even the manager and the coaches, you know, we got a little time to think. He's got to think spur of the moment. So he's got the tough job. Not to minimize mine, but, you know, they haven't had a bench coach forever. There's a reason.
Well, listen, if all the good decisions, you have a say in. So congratulations. You were the, when I first met you, you were the first base coach, right? Blue Jays, right? Correct?
Well, before that, the first job I had, it was a bullpen catcher. Bullpen catcher. Not the bullpen coach, the catcher.
Right.
And that's it. J.P. Ricciardi, a local boy.
Yeah.
Got me that job when he left Oakland. I left the Mets, actually, and went to Toronto.
You were the bullpen catcher in Toronto?
First 2 months. Buck Martinez was the manager. And he got fired June 1st, I think it was. They put me at first base. They made Carlos Tosca the manager. He was at third base. They brought in Brian Butterfield. That's how it all started for me.
Oh, yeah. So then I jumped in, and I'm like, oh, man, who's this guy coaching first? He knows what he's doing. Butter was the third base coach. Who was it? Was there a bench coach then?
I think it was Cookie Rojas.
Oh, really?
Cookie was in it. Yeah, but out of the bench coaches, I can remember the 80s, they didn't have bench coaches. That must have started in, like, the mid-90s, I think.
Yeah. So tell me about, in all seriousness, tell me about the art of being a good bench coach.
Well, let's face it. I mean, if to be a major league manager, you have to know what you're doing, right? So, my view is that the way I always used to do it, I had some good ones. DeMarlo Hill, an old favorite here.
Yeah.
It's more of a sounding board, you know. And the bench coach will take care of the little things like late in the game, maybe pinch running thing or pinch defense or something like that. Because generally, I think the manager is so locked in on his pitching moves he's going to make, right? And especially start getting towards the middle of the game, some of those little things, they're not little, but they, you know, in the grand scheme of things, they can be. So he can get distracted with that. So that's where you help out. Or if the manager thinks, what do you think about this move? I'm thinking about this or that. You give him your honest opinion, you know. I think the worst thing you can do is be too smart and try to show a manager how smart you are.
Well, you can't force it, right?
No, because in reality, you know, the manager's got his ideas, and he may bounce things off of you. But if there's a lot of things, if you don't want him changing his mind, you want him to be dead set on what he does, because he's got to answer for it. And usually those guys have great instincts of what they're doing, or they wouldn't have got to that spot. But you try to help them that they don't fall into any traps, you know, or something, miss something or something, you know. So,
I mean, you probably have a good perspective of it, obviously, having been on the other side of it, right? I mean, so no, I say, hey, listen, if I was in Carlos's spot, I wouldn't want my bench coach in saying something here. I wouldn't want my bench coach saying something here, right?
And you know what? You wouldn't want to hang anything on your other coach's head, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so that's why you got to be set in your ways. But when there's doubts or you're not sure what decision you make, you bounce things off of. But generally, too, the manager works hand-in-hand with the pitching coach on pitching moves because those are his guys, you know? So it's just kind of a team effort. And I know he might ask the hitting coaches something about certain guys. He'll talk to Sarby about defensive things. It's really a team effort, you know. The bottom line, though, it comes down to having the good players.
Oh, with this.
Never fail.
What we got?
Cannons.
Oh, the cannons. Yeah. Give me that quote again, just because it makes
big
me
Frank
feel
Howard, man. Everybody
big
knows
Frank Howard. Yeah.
He told me one day, he said, son, he said, when you look in your dugout, you see two cannons. You look in the other dugout and you see 4 or 5. He goes, "You may win a battle, you ain't winning no war." So
well,
true.
Well, as I said, as I told you last year, I think it's even more true this year. You have the cannons, my friend.
Yeah.
You have the cannons.
Yeah, we like it. We're paying for them.
Hey, well, how are you going to get the cannons? It doesn't make a difference.
That's right, man. It's a beautiful thing. Money's a beautiful thing.
Money's a beautiful thing. You know, but to come back to sort of the dynamic you have with Carlos, we talked about this before, about, you know, I think it's such a good story about how he didn't know you at all, right? They call you up. They hire you, and now he's okay. You go through 1 year, that's fine. Now you're back. I mean, it shows you sort of what a good fit this is.
Well, you know, we had such a good year last year. You know, we got that Final Four after a slow start, and you know, and yeah, I mean, we hit off our relationship. You know, whether and you know, I'm one of the older guys on the coaching staffs. So you know, so there's maybe some things that I can, you know, I definitely put it this way. I'll be honest with you, I don't understand totally the new baseball.
Yeah.
You know, I think in a lot of areas we've got too complicated. But I think sometimes I'd lend a little advice maybe on the way. You can call it old school, the old way of doing things. It's sometimes worked out pretty good.
But I think it's important to simplify. Simplify. It's not demeaning. I'm just saying simplify. Like, there's too much. A lot of times there's too much. It's just a fact. I mean, it's just too much.
Yeah, it can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
But that's one thing we do here. We got a really good balance, you know, because there's a lot of good info out there that's helpful. But yet we also, I think everybody understands the individual that's got to go out there and perform. You know, if they were all robots and you could guarantee a certain outcome, it'd be easy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But they're not. They're human beings, right? And things, they go through ups and downs, and they're not always on projections that he maybe should do this and that. Well, okay, that might be the case if he's going good. These guys aren't always going good. So you got to understand the human element, and I think that's what Carlos does very well.
So I want to talk about your three of your cannons, right? And you get, because you've been around a lot of really good players. And you've managed a lot of good players. You played with a lot of good players. And obviously the three I want to talk to about is Lindor, Pete Alonso, and also Soto. From your perspective, because it's one thing to watch him, right? It's another thing to be around him. I'm going to start with Soto. Like, this is, I don't know if you knew him at all. You watched him play. But now you've been around him for, what, 3-4 months now. What's your take?
Well, you know, I didn't know him a lick, you know. I'd seen him on TV, heard all about him. Watched him play a little bit with the Yankees last year. You know, he's a good guy, he's a quiet guy, keeps to himself. You know, that's probably generally a lot of that's too, just in a new place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an old guy. But, you know, I think, you know, he's done a lot of good things for us, but I think he's been a little frustrated too. But his struggle, when he struggles, majority of players out there in the league would take his struggles over their success, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, but he's like, you know, he's like a lot of superstars. They beat to their own drummer, mm-hmm. you know, but he's still feeling his way around, fitting in with the team and all that. But, you know, I mean, if we're going to, you know, we think we got a chance to win this whole thing. And if we do, you know, we need him on top of our game, on his game, you know.
When you've been around other superstars, I mean, you played with Strawberry, like, right? I mean, like, it's going back, and you obviously managed the Jose Bautistas and Encarnacions and those guys. It is a big crown to wear, right? You know, when you're talking about cannons, when you're the biggest cannon, and everyone knows you're the biggest cannon.
Oh yeah, they're gunning for you. You know, and it's, you know, it's not easy going to a new place that first year. I don't care how good you are. You know, I mean, that's just the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, those other two guys too. You mentioned, you know, Lindor. I watched him last year. It was amazing. He got up to a slow start. He was getting booed. You know, I'd seen him in Cleveland. You know, he was over there with Sarvey. And, you know, we played him in the playoffs in 16 and when he was a young kid. And so I knew how good he was. But then I think it was May. Things just clicked for him. And that's as good as a player I've ever
really?
Been around.
Yeah.
You know, he shows up every day to play, good and bad. He never bags out. You never take, you know, you can have a big lead or you can be down by a lot. He wants to stay in the game. Really a special guy. And, you know, and he did not miss last year. When we needed something big, he didn't miss. So, yeah, he's a special guy. He's You know, it's funny. I was telling him yesterday because Jose Reyes was out the other day. You know, another Met, great shortstop.
Yeah, switch hitter, shortstop.
Was at the ballpark at Yankees game the other day. And I was telling Lindy the other day, I said, you know, aside from all the, you know, you guys were lead off hitter, switch hitter, shortstop, whatever. I said, when he was in Toronto, he was at the end of his career when I had him in Toronto, Reyes. One thing about him, he came to play every stinking day, smile on his face, busted his butt, even though he was all aging and his production was going down. And I said, and I told him, I said, that reminds me, you guys remind me so much of each other. And then the other guy, Batista, we talked about. So you put those three guys, I'm at the top of my list in my baseball career, the guys that show up every stinking day, good, bad, or ugly to play. So anyway, who we got now?
People forgot how good Lindor, at this time last year, probably. People were like screaming about MVP, right?
Oh, you're right. He did not. Man, we needed something big last year. He got it, man. You can go back to whether home runs or driving and big base hits, you know I mean? You know, I think most people, a lot of people think he should have been the MVP. There's no question. You know, he's an everyday player, you know? I know Ohtani, the home runs, the stolen base and all that. Yeah. There's something about being on that field every stinking day, man.
Oh, yeah.
The grind of it takes its toll, and to play both sides of the ball. I think that'll make it just an MVP, DH MVP.
I like it. Let's do it. All right. And then you have Lonzo, which obviously he struggled a little bit a lot. And then it's interesting from your point of view because you see him last year going through what he went through. Then you see him this year, obviously taking off. Is there any different, discernible difference?
No, you know, it's funny. We'd talk about it a little bit last year. I mean, I just think he was pressing, you know. Because it was his free agent year. He's a human being. I've seen other guys do that, you know, in their careers. It's a big year for him, right? They get to that point. But he'd always been one of the top home run hitters in the game, you know, an RBI guy. That's just what he did. But I think he did press. Maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, that's the first time I'd ever been around him. And so I just feel a different presence about him. I think he's calmer. And, you know, he put last year behind him. You know, we talk about him. He struggled at times last year, but, you know, he had the biggest hit of the year for us against Milwaukee. And then throughout that playoffs, he did a pretty damn good job. So, those are three big.
Yeah, it's good. Those are the cannons.
Those are the cannons.
Well, okay, let me ask you this, Gibby. Is that, so you go through last year, and everything, I mean, first of all, I looked at you on June 11th. I think you guys were like 11 games under 500. I mean, it was nuts. And then you turn everything around, and you go on your way, and now it seems like you've sort of picked up where you left off. Does it feel that way with you? Or is it
different? No. I mean, you got to remember, you know, there's a lot of talent on this team, and 22? They won over 100 games.
Yeah, yeah.
23, things didn't work out. And then, of course, we bounced back last year after a slow start. But, you know, Mendy just stayed steady, right? We knew we had talent. And I think, if I remember right, we pitched good well early, but we just weren't hitting, you know. But I got to tell you, in Citi Field during the spring, man, when it's cold and the weather's crazy, that ball goes nowhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're basically a home run in team if we're going to, you know. We'd crush some balls that would just die. And I'm thinking, damn, you know. And so that was part of our struggles early offensively.
But could you feel it coming? Could you feel it coming last year?
No, early on, no. We didn't know what to expect. You know, my first time around these guys, and the whole coaching staff was new. But we knew we had talent. Now it was just a matter of whether it was. And, you know, everybody's, you hear talk about the previous year when they had a tough time, you know, so you didn't know what to expect. But then when we started hitting, you could see, okay, this is it. Because our pitching did a heck of a job, you know. Severino had a big year. Manaea, who's going to come back and give us a jolt.
Yeah.
You know, they anchored Quintana. I mean, we were solid there, but our bullpen did a really good job. So it's really a good team. But, you know, you can look really good on paper. You got to go out and do it. And sometimes, you know, when you get a lot of new people, new coaches, that takes a while to gel or mesh. Sometimes it never does. But sometimes good things take time.
Well, you're the glue. What's the best margarita in baseball?
Best margarita? Well, I know what I like.
No, you're a beer guy. You're
No, well, actually, you know, from being from South Texas, I like that Mexican food.
Okay.
And a frozen margarita, no salt.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Best. I want to know where I should go. Actually, our correspondent, Courtney, who you've been on with.
Yes.
Yeah, she asked me to ask you. Best margarita in San Antonio.
Well, there's a place downtown, it's called Mi Tierra's. Really good, but if you don't want to fight the traffic downtown, there's a place over where I live. It's called Alamo Cafe.
Alamo Cafe.
Tex-Mex.
All right.
Yeah. There's a lot of good ones. Yeah, hey, let me tell you something. Down in San Antonio, Texas, you're going to have no problems finding a good Mexican restaurant.
Well, I want to know which one that has the picture of you up on the wall.
None of them.
Yeah.
Behind bars.
Yeah. All right, man. Thank you.
Robbie, my pleasure.